Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Opening day in Major League Baseball, one of the best days of the year. It should be a national holiday. That's my personal opinion. But there's two sides of the coin, right? So you have all the bunting, right? And then I guess did they unveil a new banner, Steve, for their wild card appearance last year?
They did, and I heard Stu Sternberg say in the broadcast with Andy Freed and Neil Solance that, hey, look, getting the wild card is nothing to sneeze at. Like,
not anymore.
How many teams have been at the playoffs each of the last 5 years?
Yeah, I think that's the number is three, I believe.
Yeah, I mean, it's nothing to sneeze at, and it's not what they wanted.
Right. But they earned it, and so they're going to hang banners every time they make the postseason. Okay, fine. You can laugh at that if you're the Yankees, but I don't see the Yankees make the postseason last year, so they couldn't hang that banner if they wanted to. That aside, so, you know, it's the day of pomp and circumstance and all of that, right? But and it could not have begun much better for the Rays. I mean, seriously. I mean, it was Zach Eflin, he was dealing. I mean, he was almost perfect through five. He did give up a home run, but not before. Yandy Diaz, how about the way to start a season? First at bat, right? 2-2 count, I think. Hits an absolute laser. I mean, a seed over the short wall in left field. And, you know, lead off, first batter of the season, lead off home run. It's Yandy. It's your MVP. He ends up with three knocks in the day, going 3-for-4. And it wasn't that they didn't hit. They just didn't string them together. But it was one of the most abrupt switches of momentum that I've seen, Steve, because Eflin was, like I said, he was really, really good, albeit, you know, but for giving up a home run. And then after getting two outs, he went through five pretty easily. He had just one hit. He allowed the home run to George Springer. Only 55 pitches. And then before they could get him out of there, it was over. He gets one out, then he gets up a home run to Biggio, and then he gets a second out, and that was it. Couldn't get another guy out. And that sixth inning, Guerrero just hit a monster shot over the batter's eye. And I mean, over the batter's eye, 450 feet is what they measured it.
At 112, I believe.
Oh my God. I mean, it was just, I mean, he can make any ballpark look pretty small, pretty fast. And then Bo Bichette, of course, the Lakewood High guy, he got an infield single, and then there was a walk. Now the walk started, right? So after the walk and the infield single, Snyder goes to the mound. I'm thinking that's going to be it for him. I'm thinking, you know, here's the whole thing. The season began with the talk about how the strength of their team is their bullpen, and they're so deep down there. And I really thought that they were going to make the change, you know, but they wanted him to try to work out of it. Well, he didn't. And I guess his mechanics got a little off. Then he had a single by their catcher, Alejandro Kirk. That scored a couple of runs. And then Kiermaier slapped a single the other way. And before you know it, it's 6-1. And I mean, that happened in the time that I think, entered my development a few blocks away and got into the house. It was like, wait a minute. It was 1-1. Now it's 6-1. So it escalated quickly. They got a chance to have a big inning themselves and weren't able to really put things together. But, hey, as a good friend of mine says, well, that's baseball. So they're 0-1. They're going to go 0-162. We all know that. But there won't be any 13-game winning streak this year. And that snapped, I think you looked this up before the podcast, Steve, three straight opening day wins. Mm-hmm. How about the Toronto Blue Jays? They've now won five straight opening days. So they're rolling, too, as far as that goes. But, you know, one game does not a series or a season make. And we'll see if they're able to bounce back with a win here. And of course,
just remember back to 2019.
Mm-hmm.
Rays lose to the Astros 5-1. Verlander beats Snell.
Yeah, it was good. Yeah,
the Rays roll off five in a row after that. Ended up 11-3 after the first 14 games.
It was a great start. Yeah,
mm-hmm. Actually 14-4 after the first 18. Then they kind of hit a skid, but you know, it's opening day. You hate with the sellout crowd, and all the pomp and circumstance to lose that game, but it's a four-game series with the Blue Jays. And if you can win two of the next three and go 2-2 against a division foe, you're okay.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like I said, it stinks with all the crowds there that they didn't win. And I heard Sternberg say that the attendance this weekend should be pretty good.
Yeah, I heard that too.
Won't be sellout, but.
Yeah, but good crowds.
A good crowd. So, you know, handle the business then. I'm not sure why Cash didn't have someone warming up earlier. Matter of fact, Andy and Neil on the radio, I was driving home during that part and listening, and they were surprised there was no one warming up as well.
Oh, they mentioned that on their broadcast. Good.
They did. Yeah. You know, so I, you know, letting your ace, and he is the ace this year.
No doubt.
At this point.
Yeah.
Letting him work through it or.
Maybe. Might have been just the confidence they had in him to get out of trouble, you know. I think the walk hurt him as much as anything. But, you know, the thing about Toronto, everybody knows this. I mean, they've got some hitters. You have to try to just keep the ball in the ballpark.
Yep.
You know, if you can do that, you got a fairly good chance. Their guy was good, too. He settled down. I mean, you know, you could have had a tough outing when the first batter you face goes yard on you, you're on the road. And, you know, I think the Rays had as many hits or more hits than Toronto, but Toronto got them at the right time, put them together, and then they got the three long flies. So that's kind of the ball game. The one thing I would say, and look, I they're still missing, obviously, key pieces in this lineup, right? But the one thing I would say about it is it realistic to think that guys that had the years they had last year are going to duplicate that, right? Yandy, I think, is capable of it. I mean, he was a batting champion. I don't know if he's going to do that again.
Well, as Mark Topkin said, they think he's got more to go.
I know, which is crazy, right? Like, what more can he do? I guess the power numbers, maybe?
Well, he had a swoon in June or July that he didn't hit very well for 3 or 4 weeks last year. You know, they think if he can even that out, like that average can go up even a little more. Look, to win a batting title, it takes consistency. And he had that swoon for a little bit. And the team swooned at that time, too.
Yeah, they had a bad June. They had a horrible June.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know, so if he can level that out, they think he can go higher.
And I think health was a big thing for him because he played kind of dinged up. He missed some time. And I think if he's able to stay healthier, that'll help him, too. But what a hitter. What a great player, leader, all those things.
Mm-hmm. And one more thing on Zach Eflin, too. And we can get back to the lineup. But
yeah.
Last year, he did not allow 3 home runs in a game.
Really? Wow.
And this year, now he started this year allowing 3 in the first game. Now, that's a great lineup.
Yeah. You know, look, he's very, very good. I mean, I think Eflin was outstanding last year, and he won the most games for him and all that. Here's what I think, as Peter King would say. I think that on most staffs, he would not be an ace.
Mm-hmm. Well, he wasn't supposed to be an ace on this.
And he wasn't supposed to be here. We know that. And so generally, I mean, it doesn't have to be this way, but you almost, you know, look for that power arm, you know, to lead your staff. I mean, that's what McClanahan did, obviously. David Price back in the day and Blake Snell and all that. But, you know, he had some swing and miss stuff. I mean, it wasn't like he got 5 strikeouts the first time through the lineup.
He was perfect through the first 3 innings.
Yeah, he was great.
With those 5 Ks.
With the 5 Ks. But Eflin's one of those guys that I think if the control's not pinpoint as you face him a second and certainly the third time, you can get on him. You know, the fact of the matter is he's just really good with moving his pitches and hitting good spots. He just happened not to do that. And Toronto did not miss. I mean, just every mistake doesn't usually end up, you know, over the center field wall, the batter's eye. This time it did. This time they didn't miss it. So and this is the other thing that I thought was interesting. They said Toronto made an adjustment. And I wasn't clear on what that adjustment was, but I think maybe it was swinging earlier in the counts. But I'm not really sure. You know, I think with Eflin, you don't want to get 0-1, 0-2 with him, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Because he's got too many options for you. You know, change up, sweeper, slider, you know, locate a fastball up, all that kind of stuff. So I think they kind of started to ambush a little bit, and his location was just a little off. And, yeah, that's what happens. They're major league hitters, you know. And Toronto can swing the bats. So,
yeah, that's one of the deepest lineups in baseball.
For sure. And that's something that, you know, the Rays, you know, without some of their guys, some of the guys that are out right now, they're not as deep. They're probably about six deep, maybe. Mm-hmm. Now, I like, you know, the way some guys came up there and swung it. You know, they have some new players that are going to have to play big roles for them. But you need your A players to play the best. And, you know, Brandon Lau, he had a knock, but, like, you know, you just need those guys when they come up in key situations to deliver. And certainly Yandy did that. Didn't get anything really out of Randy today, or yesterday when the season opener. You know, I know Surrey had a hit, stolen base. Like, they got hits. They just couldn't really put them together. And, you know, that's going to happen. And that's why they're 0-1. But guess what? There's a game today. A game the next. Now, they're starting earlier, right? They're starting at 6:50 on.
So it's actually 10 minutes later than last year.
Oh, it's 10 minutes later. Okay. For Saturday game, though, right?
No, for the weeknight.
Oh, for the weeknight games. Okay.
They were 6:40 last year.
Oh, they were. Okay.
Mm-hmm. Now they're 6:50.
So now why did they move them back 10 minutes? Is there any rhyme or reason for that? Is that?
I'm guessing with traffic, the shorter games.
Oh, okay.
Because the games are now shorter for television, they probably wanted a little more in prime time.
Oh, okay.
But, you know, by pushing it back 10 minutes, but the games got shortened by 20-some last year, like, you're still getting out of there earlier than you used to.
Yeah, even on a school night.
7:10, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, that makes sense.
I haven't asked why they did, but that's my guess.
Now, how about the one thing I noticed, and this came through even on TV, and I heard Sternberg talking a little bit about it on the radio as well. The turf that they put in the Trop this year, holy cow, does it make things look different.
It does look different. I'm curious how it's going to play. They've talked about the turf's probably going to be slower.
Is that right?
It's supposed to have more of a true bounce to it.
Okay.
Although there were some hops today, they were saying, well, that took a little weird hop, but it'll take some getting used to, as any change does, but it does
aesthetically look, it's gorgeous. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Like, it looks like, you know, they had the stripes cut in the grass, you know, usually you see on other outdoor ballparks or whatever. Yep. That's what this is. This is just aesthetically, it's gorgeous. Like, it looks, the whole Trop, I thought, looked really good. And I know we're putting lipstick on a pig here a little bit, but it's never bothered me, the Trop. I like knowing it's going to be 72 degrees and I don't have to worry about getting wet, except maybe getting in there. But I thought the appearance of everything came across pretty good.
I would agree. I think, like I said, I don't know how, you know, and time will tell whether players like the new turf better, worse, et cetera. But just from an aesthetic standpoint on television, looks fantastic.
Yeah. Sternberg said when they tore up the old stuff, like, there was this film of brown dust that just covered the entire stadium and the seats and everything.
It's like when you remove tile from your house, the same thing.
Yeah, right? It just kind of sprays up in little granules and whatever. But he said if the ballpark looks cleaner, it's because everything was covered and we had to just, like, wash it down to the nth degree. But I guess they did a really good job. I wasn't there. It was weird not being – I've gone to a lot of opening days, including the first one, you know, that they ever played in 98. That's another story. It's exciting to be there. By the same token, I think sometimes whenever it is, you're going to hope it at home at some point. But that first game, it there's just so much expectations and so much energy that if you can't stay in it, it seems like a big letdown because there's, you know, you got, and then you walk out of there going, well, you know, they got 161 more of these. I don't know. I'd almost, in some ways, I'd almost rather start on the road. I don't know why. It's just get some at-bats, get used to it, you know, get into the flow of the season a little bit. But now they're into it. Now there's, you know, it's 161 to go. There's no more opening days. So all that, you know, all the stuff that they do pregame and, you know, the ceremonies and things like that, that'll slide down and then just start playing baseball. So,
well, until they go to Colorado next week, they got to do it all over again.
They got to do it in Colorado. Then, yeah, that's right. That's exactly right. Yeah, you're going to have to line up on the baselines and they'll introduce the Rockies, none of which I know. I don't think
anybody in Colorado knows them either.
They don't. My son lives there, and he's a big baseball fan. They are the worst team on paper and maybe otherwise in the majors. They won 58 games last year, and I think they lost their best players. So hopefully, all I can hope for is a couple things. One, it doesn't snow. Not that day anyway. I want it to snow because I want to go up and ski in ski country. That's a different story. But one, that it's not too cold and doesn't snow. And what would two be? Two would be that it's not too cold and doesn't snow. It's one of the better ballparks to watch a game because it's just, you got the Rockies in the background. Coors Field is beautiful. There's not really a bad seat in the building. I think we're behind the home plate, but we're really, really high. So, but yeah, the light air, you know, ball carries well. But we'll get to see all the excitement that is Rockies baseball. When I checked last, they were not sold out. Like, it's one of those things where, you know, remember the Rays were like really, really bad and be like, ooh, I don't know if they're going to sell out the opener, you know, and you just say, well, they should get one sellout, like the home opener. I don't know that that's a lock in Colorado yet. So we'll have to wait and see. But looking forward to it, you know, and the Rays, I mean, after this series, you know, this doesn't get any easier because then they got the world champions coming in, right? The Texas Rangers. And so you want to get off to at least a decent start, especially at home. You know, win more than you lose at home, go 500 on the road, the old adage, and you should be okay. So,
yeah, the Rangers are, as we record this, tied 3-3 with the Cubs in the
with,
ninth.
With the Cubbies, baby. Is that in Wrigley tonight?
No, it's in Texas.
Oh, it's in Texas. Okay. All right. Well, always fun to my wife's from Chicago. She's a Cubs fan. Not really a fan of baseball, but she grew up rooting for the Cubs, even though she's on the South Side. Of course, when Joe Maddon was there and whatnot, that was a lot of fun too, knowing him. But yeah, I think that the White Sox are really bad from what I hear this year. And the Cubs, of course, got counsel from Milwaukee to be their manager.
Mm-hmm.
So they got a pretty good ball club. I don't know if it's, you know, able to contend for a division title, but certainly I think they're better than they were last year. So this is it, man. We're going to live this sort of daily box score, watch games at night, afternoon, baseball season now for the next 6 months. And that's what's cool about it is that, you know, every day you get to check the box scores or watch a game. Pretty much you know there's a game on almost every night. And, again, best time of the year. You get the NCAA, you know, into their Sweet 16 now.
Yeah, getting out of the Elite Eight.
Now the Elite Eight, yeah, after this round. Yeah, right. There's still a couple, at least two games to go. As I'm doing this podcast, I'm watching Alabama play North Carolina.
Yep.
Which is two really good teams. Alabama
Clemson upset this Arizona year. Earlier, and then
great UConn, upset for Clemson.
UConn rolled on San Diego State in the second half.
Yeah, exactly. So it's March Madness, what we would call it? Mad Marchness or whatever that is.
Yeah, something like that.
Yeah, so a lot going on. But baseball has been the talk and was the talk, as it should be, on Thursday. And I had a chance to talk to somebody that is very popular in baseball around these parts, and that's Joe Maddon. So I think I had mentioned this a couple days ago, you know, when I was at I picked up his name when I was at Bruce Arians' charity event, you know, he had for his family foundation at the Hard Rock about a week ago Saturday. Joe Ma was in town to attend and support that. And it was just great catching up with him. We got into this discussion, just, you know, sitting there having a drink. And I wasn't reporting or anything. I was sort of off duty, if you will, if that ever happens in my career. But we got to talking about baseball. We got to talking about Ohtani. Obviously, I had not seen him in quite a while, and then that was the big story that was breaking at the time. And he had some strong opinions about it, and then he had some even stronger opinions about gambling and sports and baseball in particular. So then I got to thinking a couple of days later, I was like, you know, Joe's never been one to shrink away from his opinions or his stances, and I went and asked if you know, if he'd be willing to kind of revisit that conversation, only this time, you know, sort of on the record, get his insight. And what's important about his insight is he managed Shohei for 3 years, you know, with the Angels. And he certainly is, you know, somebody that knows him well and also knows, you know, the interpreter very, very well. And it's just it's an interesting perspective from a guy who's been in baseball as long as Joe on Otani and that whole, you know, he sort of had a front seat, you know, a front row seat of that relationship, you know, between Otani and his interpreter, which is Ipe Mazuhara. And so check out this story in the Tampa Bay Times and TampaBay.com. I'm not going to do the entire story here, but I will tell you that, you know, as the story goes, Otani's name had appeared on a bunch of betting slips. And originally Mizuhara said that is because he had gambling debts and that Otani was helping him pay him off. And now Otani says, no, he was the victim of a large theft and fraud by Mizuhara, and that he had those money stolen from his accounts. And what Madden said was, you know, that he was just gobsmacked, which I love that word, gobsmacked by this whole thing. And he goes, just no way. Like, for those of us who are around both of them for a period of time, there's no way anybody could see this coming, and nobody believes it from either side, what they're suggesting, me included, he said. I don't believe that Shohei would bet, and I don't believe that Ipe would break the trust with Shohei. And that, you know, he says, like, I was with him every day, and I would communicate them with them every day. And, you know, what I'm trying to say is that these guys were inseparable. Like everybody said, it's true, you know, and they always got along well, and you never saw a disagreement. And so, you know, Shohei has great values, and you know, when you talk to Ipe, you understand how close they are and why he trusts him. And he said, there was never a reason to think that there would ever be any disconnect between these two guys. And that's what's really hard for people that know Shohei. And the other thing about Shohei is that he's never been one. Now, look, gambling takes on a lot of forms for a lot of different reasons. He says he didn't gamble on anything, but Shohei has never been one that's been like overtly financially driven. In other words, when he left Japan, he did so leaving behind what would have been about a $200 million, you know, salary contract, whatever, to remain with his team. And when he came over here, he wasn't making that kind of money right away. And even in Japan, like he could have had enough money to, you know, to have his own home, and he just chose to live in dorms essentially with some of the players. You know, and then even coming over here, when he signed this new deal that's like 10 years, $700 million, he deferred much of it in part because he told Andrew Friedman that he wanted the Dodgers not to be strapped in terms of their ability to sign free agents because he wanted the best team. He wanted to win, and he wanted them to be in a position to play. So it's kind of like, as Madden said, he goes, you know, the money for Shohei is always going to be there because he's a bona fide superstar. Like, there's nobody in baseball that has done that since Babe Ruth. And, you know, in many ways, he's probably exceeded it. So he said, you know, even the Beatles are still making money, right? The Rolling Stones are, I mean, the money is going to come. So if it was money driven, you know, that doesn't wash. And so you kind of go through, Joe goes through all these sort of, you know, trying to reason why these two guys ended up on opposite ends of the spectrum as he witnessed their relationship. And I think Joe was also very outspoken about how gambling in particular and the way it's done today and the access that everybody has to it, right, on their phones with the apps, so many states has legalized it, et cetera. He thinks it could potentially ruin sports and hurt sports, hurt baseball, sports in general. And I think, Steve, the danger in it is, you know, and there's been, you know, Bernie Bickerstaff talked about being threatened, and, you know, players have talked about feeling like prop bets. I think the difficulty is that it's too pervasive. It's too readily available. You can do it on your phones, but you know, while these guys make money, they don't all make all the money, and you're worried about the sport being compromised because it just takes, you know, say for the prop bets, and I saw where the NCAA wants to eliminate them altogether, but like, you know, if my under over on rushing yards is 90 and I got 87 and it's the fourth quarter and we're kicking the crap out of somebody, I might decide, you know, to take myself out of a game or tell the coach I got a sore ankle or whatever. You're putting too much temptation on players, in my opinion, and those around them. And there's insider information. Like, I go back to this story that was in the New York Times about Tom Brady, of all people. And 3 days before Tom Brady announced that he was coming out of retirement, at that time, the Bucs were 60-1 to win a Super Bowl. Well, 3 days before he announced he was coming out of retirement, there was a bunch of very suspicious $10,000 and $20,000 bets placed on the Bucs to win the Super Bowl. Somebody knew something, right? It was just it just came out of nowhere that all of a sudden this team that was 60-1 was getting that kind of action on it to win the Super Bowl. And then lo and behold, he came out of retirement. So that's the thing that Madden talked about. You know, that it's just like insider trading, you know, and I believe that, Steve. I think we've made, you know, it's one thing, you know, they stayed away from Las Vegas. You never imagined there'd be a Super Bowl there or a team there. But I think that with technology and the leagues embracing the money, because remember now, you know, it's kind of the lifeblood of the NFL, people's interest leading to gambling and whatnot. But you have DraftKings, you have fantasy. You have so many things that involve this that maybe the pendulum is going to swing too far past the tipping point where if anyone starts to question what they're seeing and whether anything is not on the level, you know, that's the problem. And I think it was – he quoted Joel Sherman, wrote a column about this, and it was a pretty good thought. He said, you know, when sports is going to be in trouble, ironically – is when people won't bet on it because they don't trust that the outcome is going to be original. So here we are talking about gambling, and if it gets really bad, nobody would put their money on what they're watching. That's kind of like a full circle problem.
Well, and that's why leagues have, you know, the Calvin Ridley's getting suspended. And,
absolutely.
And they have rules on this. Whether they're strict enough, who knows? I know, you know, the leagues have – training for employees as far mm-hmm. as giving out any information, you know, confidentially.
Oh, yeah.
You know, there's punishments for that kind of stuff. Just, you know, not just players, but
right
employees that may have access to a player who's hurt or not going to play or whatever.
Right.
You know, and it's the leagues take this seriously, but they're also welcoming all the money that comes in from it.
Right. They're walking a fine line. You know mm-hmm. what I mean? They really are. They kind of want their cake and eat it too a little bit here, and I understand it. And gambling has been around, you know, for as long as there's probably been sport. But I just think that they've embraced it so much and they're counting on it so much for future revenues. And I've always said that I think what the ultimate goal will be to have sports betting and betting in football in the stadiums on game mm-hmm. day at your seat.
Mm-hmm.
Whether it's prop bets or whatever, when that happens, the franchise value is going to go through the roof. But it would take more states to legalize gambling for all that to happen. Nonetheless, like they better get a handle on it because I think it could become too pervasive. And it doesn't take many, you know, or even, you know, really just one or several characters to get into a jam and say, hey, I'm gonna influence the outcome of something. This, whether it's a prop bet, the outcome of a game, it's scary. And I think we're reading more and more of these stories now. And I don't think it's going to stop with Ohtani. But just imagine if, for somehow, some way, it comes out that Ohtani had some involvement, right? Certainly, if you bet on baseball, it's over. You know, do you see what Pete Rose said the other day that he should have had an interpreter. It was hilarious.
Would you see L.A. De La Cruz, the Reds phenom shortstop? Did his first press conference in all English for the first time in his career.
Did he? Okay.
And said he's been, you know, learning English. He wants the fans to be able to understand him. He wants to understand the fans.
That's awesome.
Et cetera. And he says, he said something about, I don't need an interpreter. And
that's a good line. Well, listen, and I understand why they use him, believe me, because I think, you know, whoever I've spoken to in a locker room, whether they speak Spanish, Korean, whatever it is, their English is far more better than any language they speak that I can do. And so I think it's noble for anyone from another country to try to speak English or attempt it. Cause you know, how many of us, when we go travel abroad, do we just say, oh yeah, I'm in France, let me speak French now. Right. Sometimes you don't even try. You just expect people to be able to speak English. And guess what? Most of them do around the world. Most of them speak more than one language, believe it or not. But, you know, I know that some people have a problem with the interpreter. I never have. I mean, you know, these guys are more comfortable in their native languages and they don't want to be misunderstood. And so I totally get why we have them. I mean, the Rays have 11 players from different countries. You know, I mean, that's incredible.
Mm-hmm.
And you're seeing that baseball is an international sport. So it's inevitable that you're going to have interpreters in the game. But this relationship between Ohtani and him went beyond that, or seemingly went beyond that. And that's what Madden was trying to emphasize here, is that these guys were inseparable and liked each other's company and liked each other in general. And to the point where it's hard to fathom that, you know, that the interpreter would be given access. Maybe not as crazy like with the finances, because again, I said Ohtani really didn't focus a lot on the money he made or spent. And he makes a lot of money off the field too, so it's not just strictly his contract. But to have that kind of trust and then have it, you know, sort of breached like that, to Joe, that seemed a bridge too far. And he hopes Major League Baseball will do a thorough investigation, but also, you know, try to be efficient in doing so. He also said, no matter the outcome, he thinks people won't believe it. He goes, you know, there's going to be some that'll say, even if Ohtani is, proven to have not engaged in any gambling activity or whatnot, that some just will have their own alternative facts and say, well, you know, I'll never believe in this guy. I never believed this guy. Now that happens these days more and more. But fascinating perspective, I thought, from Joe. And he's living his best life, man. He's up there in Pennsylvania. When I called him, I guess they're having a room built onto his home. But he is he's at the Valley Country Club in Sugarloaf, Pennsylvania. And he said, you know, I'm standing in my kitchen, and to the left is the eighth green. I got the mountains off in the distance. I got the ninth tee box to my right, and across my kitchen is the first fairway. And he goes, if you hit the drive too long on the second hole, it's par three. It's in my kitchen. He went out and picked up a bunch of golf balls that were in the creek. He goes, those balls weren't great balls to begin with. He goes, which tells me they were bad golfers, because they hit it over the green into the creek on a par three. But he's happy there. It's a spectacular place. He said, you know, he's building a greenhouse. He's going to grow his own vegetables, all this stuff. He could live anywhere. Would like to manage again, but only in the right situation. And of course, we know how he, you know, with his book with Tom Verducci, just kind of trashed the analytical world, which is going to make it difficult for anybody really to want Joe Madden at this point. And he is 70 years old, but I still think he could do it. I still think he'd be phenomenal, you know, with any team. But I don't know that he's going to get the chance. And he said, if he doesn't, he's fine. You know, he's like, yeah, I'm good, man. He goes, I'm pretty good at turning the page. And that's sort of what he's had to do.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free, or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
And And finally, we did get a chance to talk about this because we
had Mark Topkin yesterday. So
we had Mark yesterday, and so the Lightning continue this point streak, right? Is this like 7 games in a row now they've got at least 1 point?
7-0-1 in their last 8 games.
Phenomenal, yeah. And this time they took down the Boston Bruins, which is one of those teams that they could face in a first-round matchup.
It was one of their best efforts of the season defensively.
Defensively, right?
Yeah. I mean, the one goal was on a bad turnover by Matt Dumba. They gave up, they had another couple turnovers that led to some chances. But for the most part, Boston did not have many chances in that game.
Right.
The Lightning really controlled play in that game. Defensively, may have been their best effort of the season, if not one of the best for sure.
Now, is that because of the additions they've made or just Bassey's better or...
If I had to guess, I think Dumba and Duclair have added something to the room. I think you've seen them getting better throughout the year. I thought Emil Lilleberg had his best game of the season.
Yeah.
He was extremely physical, but he was in the right places. He was seemed more confident in all his decision making.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you like to see, I think you've seen them getting better. Like,
oh yeah, no, they have definitely have.
I think Vazzy's been playing much better. I think the additions have helped, but I also think it's, look, there's 10 games left. They know this is crunch time. They know that they're kind of in playoff mode already. I mean, before this point streak started, you kind of went, are they going to make the playoffs? They were in the playoff spot, but are they going to make now with 10 games to go? Their magic number is 11. Like they win 5 more games. They win 5 out of the next 10. And that means Detroit and New York Islanders have to win out just to beat the Lightning. So, I mean, they're in a really good position. Now, they're not going to clinch till a couple days prior, probably. But
right.
And they're only 4 points behind Toronto for third place.
And they have
2 games against Toronto still.
Yeah. I mean, that's the key, right, is that you can control your fate with those 4 points if they can stay tied or, you know, or get close to them. I wouldn't rule them out as far as, you know, getting that last playoff spot and not being a wild card and maybe sneaking in as the third team. But the key is to be playing your best hockey when you need to be, and that's right now. And if they can get hot, go into the playoffs with a lot of momentum, with Vasi in particular being healthy and on his game, there's no one they can't beat. There isn't. There's no one they can't beat. I mean, they have and can beat Florida, although I think they're the best team in the East. They have and can beat the Rangers. And certainly they took down Boston the other night. So really, you know.
Florida's scuffling right now. They're 3-6-1 in their last 10.
Do you think that's just like they were so far out in front and they were playing so well that it was inevitable they would take a little bit of a slide back? Or is this a bad sign of things to come?
I mean, I think it's some ebbs and flows in the season. I know they've had some injuries. Aaron Ekblad's coming back now.
Yeah.
So that helps them. You know, I mean, that's a big part of their defense there.
Yeah.
But I think it's ebbs and flows in the season. When you get off to a hot start, like, it's, you know, you're going to lose. I mean, but look at the teams they've lost to recently. The Islanders fighting for their playoff life.
Right.
The Bruins, who they're in a race for the top seed. The Predators, who rattled off like 18 games in a row with points. I mean, it's incredible. The Lightning, the Rangers, the top team. I mean, they're playing Carolina. Like, these losses are the top teams in the league.
Yeah. Highly motivated teams fighting for something, too, you know?
Yeah. Absolutely. So, you know, I don't, you know, if you're the Panthers, you don't worry about it. I mean, what you're worried about, and I haven't watched their game, so I can't tell you, like, did they play really poorly? Like, against the Lightning, they probably should have won that game.
They did. They should
have. Andre Vasilevskiy stole that game. I mean, for 40 minutes, the Panthers dominated the Lightning.
Oh, the number of shots. I mean, the Lightning, you know.
The Lightning got off to a 4-0 lead, and then it was all Panthers after that. And
absolutely.
They just couldn't get that fourth goal across to tie it.
Right.
And then the Lightning got an empty netter. But, you know, so if you're the Panthers, you're not worried. I mean, you clinched a playoff berth tonight.
Right.
Even though you lost, you clinched a playoff berth.
Right.
So they're in the playoffs with 8, 9, 10 games to go, whatever they have left.
Yeah.
You know, so it's just the ebbs and flows of a season. But, you know, when you've got off to a big lead and a great record, you can afford to take a stretch of that. But they've also lost to really good teams. Like, they're not losing to San Jose and Anaheim and Columbus. Like, these are the top teams in hockey.
And those teams have more desperation. They're fighting to get into the playoffs where you know you're going to be and probably the top seed. So the motivations are different, and that's human nature. And, yeah, I get it. But don't sleep on the Lightning, because they're on some kind of roll here, and they're taking down some really good hockey teams. So again, momentum, you know, it may not count for as much as we try to make it out to be at times. It's really just how you play in the playoffs, how you play in those games,
mm-hmm.
the adjustments you make, you know, whether you can, you know, avoid getting down in the series. Yep. And
I did find it funny, and not that national pundits' opinions mean much.
Yeah.
They don't impact games. But Kevin Weeks,
former goalie, Lightning player.
Played for the Lightning,
yeah.
Yep.
Yeah.
Put out his top 10 goalies right now list.
Please tell me Vasi's in
it. Let me read these to you.
Oh, no.
You want to go 1 to 10 or 10 to 1?
Let's go 10 to 1, I guess.
10 to 1. Ukko-Pekka Luukkonen. Number 9, Alexander Georgiev. Number 8, Igor Shesterkin.
He's 8 still?
Number 7, Juuse Saros. Number 6, Joey Decord. Number 5, Stuart Skinner. Number 4, Jeremy Swayman. Number 3, Thatcher Demko. Number 2, Sergei Bobrovsky. And number 1, Connor Hellebuck.
Don't even tell me he's not in the top 10.
You notice anybody missing?
Yeah, like the best goaltender on the planet, most likely, on most days.
You get to Vezina to the other guy? No, number 1 BS. Number 1 BS.
Well, I don't know if Vasi is motivated by such bulletin board material, but hey.
He's got the most wins since December 1st in the NHL.
And didn't make the top 10 on this list.
Yeah.
Not a very good list.
Now, if you just look at pure stats for the year, no, Vasi is not a top 10 goalie.
Yeah.
But we also know he came back from back surgery and wasn't playing great when he came back. But have you watched Vasi of late? You don't think he's a top 10 goalie right now? This was his not like all time or whatever. This is goalies right now. Have you seen Vasi the last few weeks?
I saw him against Florida.
Yeah. And Kevin Weeks did that game.
He had 50-something saves. How could you come out of that game that you did as a studio host and not have him in your top 10 from that alone? That was Florida taking batting practice against him. Mm-hmm. I mean, yeah.
I don't know if Vasi's in the bulletin board material, but there is one right there.
No, there's no doubt. Wow. Not in the top 10? Holy cow.
And Ukko-Pekka Luukkonen for Buffalo just last night or two nights, the same night the Lightning beat the Bruins, before this list came out, gave up 4 goals in the first and was pulled.
Ouch, babe. He may fall to 11 then, maybe. I don't know.
It didn't have others receiving votes, so I don't know where Vasi exactly. was. Was he 11
maybe
or 15
Vasi's
or
like
what?
Ranked
I don't know.
14th or 13th, they'll move up. That's insane.
I just thought, you see a list like that, and you're like, really? Come on.
No respect. Like, no respect.
If you don't think he's the top goalie right now, current
That's
play,
fine.
Okay. I mean, yeah. It's all subjective anyway, but.
Yeah.
But the way Vasi has played, right, the last few weeks, like, which to me is right now.
Yeah. Be real, man.
Anyway.
Yeah. Well, they'll get their respect when they get in the postseason if they earn it. And
they have the Islanders in town Saturday night, so.
Yeah, that's another
and
good
then,
one.
And then the Red Wings on Monday night. So those are the two teams. Those are the top two teams just outside the playoffs.
Chasing them, right? Yeah.
Yeah, they would be the third and fourth wild card if there was one, but there's not. So
yeah,
those are the two. You beat those two teams and your magic number falls big time because those are the teams. That's a 4-point game, essentially. If you beat both of them,
right,
your magic
right.
number went from 11 to at least, at worst, 7, if not better.
Right.
So.
Well, good for them. I mean, I'm just glad we're coming to the end. I love the Stanley Cup playoffs. Mm-hmm. I don't think there's a better postseason or a harder one to win. I know, NFL and the Super Bowl and all that, World Series, we've seen the Rays not.
They're all great. All the postseasons are great, but
they're all
Stanley
great,
Cup's the hardest to win.
It's the hardest to win, and it's such a war of attrition. It's such a grind and a battle and a physical sort of toll that's taken on each team that wins and advances. It's just really special, and I'm looking forward to that big time. I love that stuff. All right, so we will be watching, of course, the Tampa Bay Lightning as they play over the weekend. The Rays will continue their series with the Toronto Blue Jays, see if they can get back in it and then maybe take mm-hmm. the series or at least split before they host the Texas Rangers, which is coming up here after this series. Mm-hmm. In the meantime,
it's Good Friday and happy Easter this weekend and all the who celebrate that.
Absolutely. Yeah. Be safe out there and remember, those that have been with us and are no longer with us again. I mean, I think this is going to be a special Easter for my wife because she lost her mom this year. Mm-hmm. And you know, you think of those things. And so, yeah, if you're going to church and you celebrate that, enjoy that. The kids are off on Good Friday, which is, you know, always special to have them for a long weekend. So, yeah, just live it up. Enjoy your family and be safe. And we'll talk to you again here on Monday. Thanks for listening. For Steve Bursnick, I am Rick Stroud of the Tampa Bay Times. Have a great weekend, everybody.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.